Welcome to the Hell Yes Life podcast, where you'll hear inspiring stories and life lessons from amazing Hell Yes entrepreneurs who are running their for-purpose businesses and living their Hell Yes lives. I'm your host, Norman Bell. Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Hell Yes Entrepreneur Podcast. I am your host, Norman Bell, and I'm super excited today. Today we have as our guest, Corey Blake. Now, let me tell you about Corey. Corey is the publisher of Conscious Capitalism Press and the founder and CEO of Roundtable Companies, whose purpose is to tell the story behind yours. Corey has spent 12 years helping business leaders use storytelling to transform themselves and their organizations. His work with books and graphic novels has yielded numerous independent publishing awards and mentions or features in the New York Times, Wall Street Journal, Forbes, and Wired, to name a few. Corey is the creator of the Vulnerability Wall and the Vulnerability is Sexy card game. His documentary of the same name won a 2017 Addie and Hermes Awards for branded content. And Corey is also has a background as a professional actor and has starred in one of the 50 greatest Super Bowl commercials of all time. We'll be sure and touch on that a little bit later. He's also worked on the film Fight Club. How cool is that? And numerous television shows, including The Shield and one of my favorites, Buffy the Vampire Slayer. So Corey, what a great background. Welcome to the Hell Yes Entrepreneur Podcast.
Thank you so much, Norman. Hell yes. Glad to be here.
Great to have you. Looking forward to diving into storytelling, as I was mentioning to Corey before the show. Storytelling is an area that I'm going to be exploring a bit in the coming weeks and months. So I'm looking forward to diving in and getting into the nitty-gritty about stories. So Corey, why don't you, I always like to start off by asking our guests, what is your hell yes? What is that thing that really lights you up and makes you come alive?
Thank you. Yeah, my hell yes is that intimate moment of connection between human beings, that moment of being seen for what is beautiful about one another. It's not always a romantic thing. It's just this spark that gets lit when we're recognizing each other's humanity in a way that touches each of us. Mm-hmm. I just love being in that space, creating that space, making room for that space.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Love it. And I think we'll get kind of more into what you mean by all that in just a minute. But can you remember a time in your life? It doesn't have to be a crystal clear memory of you on the playground when you were 7 years old or something, but can you remember a time when you realized, like, wow, this is what really lights me up?
Yeah, the first instance that I have a memory of is when I was 10 years old. Yeah. And it was I had a cousin that was born. And I remember we would meet up, my aunt and my parents would bring us all together at our grandmother's house. And I remember sitting on the floor and just staring into the eyes of this little baby boy and getting lost. And just, I don't know how long I would stare at him as a baby, but I think it was like for a while, there was something about that connection. And later in life, only recently have I come to actually realize, oh, when I was a baby, my mother used to stare into my eyes for really long periods of time. So that, I think, became a very addictive, comfortable, safe place. Hmm. And oddly, one of the things that I do now that some people find really crazy, I love it, though, is I do eye gazing with people at events. I'll sit with people in silence and just look at each other for sometimes long periods of time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, I can kind of relate to that. I think we both have acting in our I know that you do. And I also have theater and some film acting in my background. And I can remember those acting exercises where you would just, that would be, one of the exercises just to, sit across from someone and look them in the eye and how kind of, vulnerable that is. So I think that can get right into talking about vulnerability there. And so why don't you give us introduced you with the bio there, but why don't you give us your own sort of 30,000 foot view of Corey Blake and everything that you're up to these days? Just go ahead and introduce yourself.
Yeah, sure. So, so I run Roundtable Companies, and as you mentioned, Conscious Capitalism Press is a really important project in my life. I'm a huge proponent of the movement of conscious capitalism. We're a partner company to them, and I really feel like that movement, when I founded in 2015, as when I first went to conscious capitalism, that was a space that challenged me to integrate the performer that I used to be with the business person that I had become.
Yeah.
So like this past 4 years has been a lot of that reintegration, which was really nerve-wracking at first because I had to ask the question, will that magic show up for me again? Because mm-hmm. I had put that on a shelf. I started RTC in 2005 and it was like head down, build a business. But today, as a result of all of that integration, I get to focus on storytelling. I get to help people to really uncover what is special, what is beautiful about them at an individual level and at an organizational level, mm-hmm. so that it can then be amplified through creativity and then raised to the power of vulnerability, which is to say, like, as courageous as you want to be is really how you can gain that exponential effect. The result that I'm so moved to watch and witness constantly is a magnetism that yeah. draws in their tribe and really repels the people that would otherwise waste their resources or just belong in another sandbox and aren't the right fit.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, let's just dive in and talk about this. Wherever you want to start about storytelling with businesses, you know, I've seen firsthand that the power of this, and I'm looking forward to diving in more. But you know, what tell us a little bit about maybe your entry point back into, like, why did you decide to do this?
So I my whole identity throughout childhood was that of a performer. Like, business was not on my radar at all. I have a theater degree. I make fun of myself saying I have a degree in make-believe. Like, I came from that world.
Yeah.
And I love all of that training and that background. But I came to a point in my acting career where I felt like I was a tool for other artists.
Yeah.
Right. Like, I was at their disposal, but I would show up for, you know, anywhere from 2 to 8 days on a set where other people have an established family. I was a guest for dinner, so to speak.
Yeah.
Right. It never felt like I belonged. And I was really, I'm somebody who I thrive in a space of belonging. And so came to a point where I really needed to stop acting because it was putting me in a place where I was unhappy. I was going on auditions, but I was crabby that I had to leave. I was starting to produce and direct, and I loved building teams, and I loved that creativity. And the way I was making my money, though, I found to be irritating. And I was like, yeah. Eventually, some young person would love the opportunity to be doing these things, and I should let them take it. And so did the producing and directing, started my first two storytelling companies, but blew both of them up when I made really bad decisions with who I got romantically involved in. Mm-hmm. Typical Hollywood cliche, whether it was someone within the first storytelling company that I founded, you know, dated someone within that context. And then the second project, I was directing a project and I dated the leading actress. Like, right. So I'm learning how to do storytelling, but the relationship piece, I was really still messing up. Mm-hmm. Well, started RTC as a very practical play. I was getting married and I was leaving acting, so I needed some income. I was like, you know what? It all starts with writing. I should probably figure out how to be a good writer. And back then, like, Craigslist was the thing and the place that you'd, you know, find writing opportunities. But it was all practical stuff, like ebooks on foot fungus and, you know, magazine articles on why chocolate is good for you. And,
yeah.
But I started in that space of partnering up talented writers with businesses that needed them. And I found that in that in-between space, as that bridge, I was really good at helping both parties exceed their expectations. Mm-hmm. So I loved playing in the in-between. And because of the LA background and the storytelling background, quickly world-class coaches and consultants started coming to me and saying, can you tell the hero's journey of the CEO that I'm working with?
Mm-hmm.
And so I got involved in the coaching world, got ridiculous training from just such talented, beautiful people. That really was my whole foray into business. And then eventually the CEOs themselves started hiring us. And suddenly, you know, I had way more work than I could handle alone. And here I was building a business upon my theater degree.
Awesome. Awesome. Love it. Love it. I can relate so much to a lot, you know, just about everything you said there, including the acting piece of sort of like, oh, I don't know. I can remember feeling a little bit like a dancing monkey occasionally, just sort of like, you know, they're just, you know, okay, smile the way you did in your headshot. No, not like that. No, silly, you know, try it again. I don't know, you know.
Oh, I feel such agony as you bring that up.
Oh God. I'll save the other stories for another time, but take us into it then. So now here you are. In a way, you kind of told your own hero's journey story there from actor and theater degree to what you're doing now. So as much as you care to, take us into how do you work with your clients and a little bit about your process.
Sure. So about 50% of our business is helping people write the book they're born to write, which is not a what I know or have learned book, but a who I am book. Right. Mm-hmm. So it's a very intimate book. There's a lot of vulnerability in that process. It's intended to be transformative because I believe don't expect anyone to change reading your book if you haven't changed through the process of writing it. Mm-hmm. So we hold that space for people. And again, that's about 50% of our business. But there came a point where we recognized that this process we would take people through, because it was transformative, we had to ask ourselves, are there other ways we could apply this process? And one of the first ways that we figured out was when I popped out of the business itself and started going to events, I had this awareness of all these people are coming together and it doesn't seem like people really feel connected until it's time to leave. And that feels like this just tragic waste, right? Because when we feel connected, we take bigger risks, we take better advantage of the time together. And so we said, maybe we could use our process to do something about that. And we ended up inventing this art installation that supports people in sharing something that they feel vulnerable about through an anonymous submission that then our artists take and create beauty out of on this huge, you know, 8 foot tall, 16 foot wide black wall. So that when that person comes back, they see this thing that they felt ugly about or shameful about or guilty about that's now being reflected back to them as a piece of beauty. And it creates this collision moment of, oh, which story do I want to move forward with? It's very subconscious stuff. But like, so we applied it there. We do documentary films for people. We just wrapped one up with a company that is solving the paycheck to paycheck crisis in America. Like, unbelievable work that they're doing. This company's doing it at scale, and it's called PayActive, and I'm like just blown away at what they're doing. But we helped him finish his book and publish it. We help people with organizational storytelling. We're working with a really cool wine that's being launched right now, where the label is two guys who are both have their guns drawn and raised, and they're back to back. But if you unfold the label, the 20 paces between them have already been walked, and they're ready to point and shoot. And there's these seven witnesses in the background. And so we've created this really elaborate backstory for all nine people on the label. And we're doing a 10 episode podcast series.
Oh, cool.
On how these nine people came to this moment where this duel is about to happen. It's called Dueling Pistols.
Oh gosh. Cool.
So we get to do stuff like that, but we do it, Norman, from the angle of that story is steeped in the values of the company that we're working for. It's called Terlato Wines. It's a wine distributor. We interviewed a bunch of their influential staff and determined in life, like, what are they running from and what are they chasing after? Like, what's the tension that makes them human beings? Because we've all got that stuff at a subconscious level. We unearthed all that stuff, and all these characters are based on what they revealed, but then we fictionalized, right, the backstory by putting it in 1840s California gold rush. So the fun of it, the excitement for me is we're helping them amplify what they stand for: high risk, high reward, fun, adventure, heroism. You talk to anyone in that company, you'll feel that because that's the kind of people that they attract. And we're helping them to magnetize that by creating a story that lives from that place, but is super creative and fun.
Love it. Love it. God, that sounds like fun. So I want to take a step maybe up or back for just a second, because I think you and I know the power of storytelling, how important it is. I mean, I know from my research and experience that storytelling isn't like a sideshow marketing trick. It's like an integral leadership skill, right? But maybe a lot of people don't know that. And a lot of people might still think, well, storytelling, that's like, you know, Game of Thrones or Lord of the Rings, whatever it is. So why is storytelling, just to take it to a 101 level here, why is storytelling important in a kind of a business environment?
So for
entrepreneurs?
Absolutely. I love the question. So think about the way that we traditionally communicate in business, and you can, to really exemplify that, you can go to any LinkedIn bio, right? Pretty much 99.9% of them. It's all credibility. It's all what I've accomplished. It's all how awesome I am.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just the way it is. And it's not a bad thing. But if we don't accompany that by something human, then emotionally, we don't impact people. We don't open anything up. We are only appealing to their intellect. But as we know, it's been proven time and time again that we make decisions as human beings emotionally first, and then we rationalize them, right, with our thinking. So in the absence of something that is human, we're actually not giving people an opportunity to have a definitive reaction that either says, holy smokes, where have you been all my life? Or, oh, I need to back away slowly because you are totally not for me. Mm-hmm. The value of creating stories that invite people into that moment is that the right people come running towards us, and the people who are just not right for us, they do back away. And the amount of savings of expenses, right? How many companies, I mean, only six years ago, 80% of our clientele was transactional, right? And how much time did we spend just pulling our hair out because certain clients were not the right fit? Mm-hmm. Today, we're like 98% on target in alignment with people because our branding attracts the right kind of people, repels those who belong somewhere else. And that's all done through storytelling, which when it's done well, is based in authenticity, is based in what an organization stands for at that very human level.
Yeah. So I think it might be worth for our listeners, and again, obviously anybody listening to this who, you know, this will be a kind of a taste of what Corey has to offer here, and contact him for more if you want more. But just if we, imagine the solo the passion, purpose-driven entrepreneur out there listening to this podcast right now, who's liking what we're talking about here. They're like, well, how can I tell my story? And where would you suggest someone start in this process if they were going to try to take any step on this on their own?
So I am a believer that each one of us, particularly I'm fascinated with how this exists in business, but each one of us is an artist in life, and we are using our work as a canvas to paint a version of the world that we wish to see. Right. So particularly when we are a founder, right, that canvas, we have a lot of control over. It's very subconscious stuff, but we are manifesting something that at a very DNA level, we wish to exist in the world as a representation of who we are. And so for me, there's been such a profundity to exploring the origin story moments in my life that have defined my philosophy.
Yeah.
You know, looking back, there are very definitive points. I shared a couple of them with you already around the connection with my mother, the connection to my first cousin, and just, you know, that being in that space. And then there are a number of pain points early on that where my gifts were really born out of survival mechanism, which is something that's human. We all do it. When we go back and actually can start unpacking those, we can get to a point where it's easy for us to lay out and show the world why we have universally been destined to paint this picture using our company, which just builds an immense amount of trust. Like, you know, right? If you tell me, if I can be invited into how you were not only born, but like universally destined to be a podcast host, right? Like, and why that's the thing that you're here to do. I'm going to approach this from a completely different standpoint than how I might if with someone who appears it's just transactional, right? They're using it as a mechanism to generate more business, or not that that's a bad thing, but when I know that universal destiny piece, like everything unlocks. So you asked for an action step. I have an offer that I'm super proud of, and it's totally free. It is a 30 to 40 minute guided experience that people can download. Cool. The intention is that I bypass your intellect as you're listening to it and get into that embodied DNA stuff and help you reveal what you stand for before you quite know what's going on. It's a little bit of a magic trick. I get to do it in keynotes. I get to do it in workshops I do with organizations around the country. People can find it at roundtablecompanies.com/purpose. Totally free. And like I said, I'm super proud that it's out in the world. I've seen it just impact lives in such a beautiful way.
Awesome, Corey. And we'll be sure and put the link to that that exercise, that free exercise, in the show notes. So Hell Yes Entrepreneurs, you can access that directly. And I will be doing it myself. That sounds great. That sounds great.
I love it.
In that process, I noticed, because I've been reading some books about storytelling for entrepreneurs, for businesses and so forth. And it seems like a lot of the process or a lot of the approaches can be sort of a little bit heady, or sort of like, okay, I've got to tell the story of how I founded this business. And so it's like, yeah, then I went out and I, you know, tried to get investment funds and that didn't quite work and blah, 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 blah. But for me, I guess my personal take in coming into this is I'm looking for the stories that really light people up, you know, like when there's, and it might not be the story that you think it would be. You know, I was reading this story about Howard Schultz, and it was talking about the third, how he went to Italy, and he apparently told this story all the time when he was building Starbucks, that he went to Italy and he saw this third place concept, this, you know, where people would meet and so forth. And he came back, and you can't fault that story because obviously, hey, look at Starbucks, it's doing very well. But I was more interested in another piece of his background, which was that he grew up in the project. And I forget where he grew up, but in very challenging situations. And I wanted to hear more about that, right? So it's kind of getting into that that realm. Maybe we could talk a little bit about this vulnerability piece. You know, like why is vulnerability so important? What is vulnerability? And you know, why is it almost kind of, it sounds like you were describing it as a superpower in a way, or a magnetizer.
Yeah, absolutely. So you're making me think of this art installation that we do as an example, because I think it's a nice, easy example for what you're talking about. You got your traditional LinkedIn bio that creates hierarchy, or imagine, you know, when you show up to a new conference where you don't have any real identity, right? All the mental chatter that goes on. Who's further along than me? Who am I further along than? How big is that company? What does that mean about me? Like this, all this garbage that our heads do, right? Well, when we can create ways for people to shift from intuitive hierarchy to intuitive equality, everything changes, right? Yeah. So as an example, the first wall that we ever did, some of my favorite entries were, who am I to even put my plate down next to some of these people? I lost my company. My servant leadership intimidates my husband and it makes me nervous about our marriage. Holy smokes. You see a whole wall of 100 of those and realize everyone comes from a member in this room. And it's like, oh, we're just all human beings trying to figure it all out.
Yeah.
And then we talk to each other differently and we just lose all that mental garbage that gets in our way. That is ultimately what vulnerability offers, is it takes away the pedestal and just makes us a bunch of human beings together.
Okay, so what does that look like? Okay, and I'm completely with you. I've seen also, even just in Facebook posts, right? Most of the time in Facebook posts, hey, look at me, I'm in Mazatlan, you know, the best of my life. And by the way, you're never going to hear anything about that horrible argument I had on day three with my, you know, whatever. But when we present that vulnerable side of ourselves, like, hey, here's something I'm really struggling with. I did a post last November about how I walked away from a job that wasn't the right fit for me. And here's what my passion is and here's what I want to go for. And people just they reacted so strongly to that. And other posts my wife, without going into the details, but speaking of vulnerability, she went through a breast cancer. We went through that in 2018, and just anything we were posting about that, people were so supportive and showing up because we were sharing that with them, right? So I've seen that. And yet, how does this show up? Let's say you're a founder or a CEO of a small company, and how does this show up in on the ground? So is it in speeches, in investor pitches, on the website? I'm trying to think of the LinkedIn bio that, hey, you know, I failed the first, you know, whatever it is, you know, what does it look like?
Well, I really believe it's a lifestyle. So, right, it shows up in lots of different ways because ultimately the leader sets the level of permission within an organization. Yes. So if as a leader, I'm only willing to dip my toe in the vulnerability water, ain't nobody going to dive into the deep end, right? That's just it's just too terrifying. You have to have that level of permission. So the leader does set the tone. So it can happen at an internal level. It can happen during a core values exploration, mm-hmm. where we're really diving into one group that I worked with, members on the leadership team. We got into the nitty gritty stories. And here's a great example. This is a member of a leadership team of a publicly traded company out of New York. It's a tech company. And one of the words that had risen to the surface as a priority for people was dreaming. Mm-hmm. And this gentleman ends up, we get into the nitty gritty of the story, which was not accessible at first glance, right? Like you said, it's heady first. But when we really started pulling some strings and pulling some thread, comes out that years ago, when his child was, I believe it was 3 years old, his wife within a 2 week time frame was diagnosed with an illness that took her life by the end of that 2 weeks.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
Right. Really heavy. She's gone. He has no idea who he is or like what is happening to him. He's got a really young child. Mm-hmm. And he said that while he was working, one thing that he would do is he would just need to take these walks after this happened. Mm-hmm. Sometimes that walk was 10 minutes. He's like, sometimes that walk was 6 hours. Mm-hmm. So what ends up happening as a result of him taking these walks is he starts losing weight. Mm. He had been overweight. And as he starts losing weight without intending to, he starts feeling better. Mm. And he said there came a point where he started feeling better to a degree that he started dreaming about a future that didn't exist for a long, like he thought about taking his life. I mean, he thought it was over, right? So now when we tap into at that level, what does dreaming mean to this organization?
Yeah.
Well, there's an anchor right there for what it means, right?
Yes, absolutely.
So that's one way that it might get told for them. It got told internally. I don't think they've used it externally yet, but that's absolutely a possibility, right? Mm-hmm. To share, like, this is one of the things that we stand for. And this is a moment of birth around why that's so important, and identity, like, it's just massive, right? So it can show up in those ways. This stuff, vulnerability, particularly for a leader. We work with a lot of leaders who have had a transformative moment, right, where they've had an awakening to something new, but their company has already, like, it's already way up and running. In many cases, like, thousands of employees already. Yeah. And they have this realization of, okay, I'm wanting to take us in new places, and I have no idea how to help everyone else feel invited into that. I'm trying to relay that, but it's really not working well, right? So tapping into the vulnerability of the awakening and the awareness of, here's the person I was, and I don't degrade or have any negativity towards that. And yet this new thing has emerged in me, and I want to invite you guys into that. Like, that's a vulnerable conversation, right? Because some people are not going to be on board with that. In fact, a fair percentage of people probably need to transition out of an organization when they're making that kind of transition. Certain employees will no longer be right. Certain customers will no longer be right. But by getting into alignment and being willing to be vulnerable about that, they can invite more of the right people and make room for them as the other people transition to where they belong. So on a large scale, right, vulnerability can play a really definitive role in the transformation of an organization once the leader's had an awakening and wants to step into it. And if they don't, if they can't capitalize on that, if they can't get into that vulnerable space, that transition it'll actually pull them back into their previous identity. Right. So it's really, there's high risk stakes to this stuff also. I think one other way that I'll share that vulnerability can show up for an organization is in sharing the more of the wholeness, not just what we do like on social media, as you were alluding to, which is we try to control other people's impression by sharing one dimension of who we are.
Yeah.
Right. So when we let go of the need to control what other people think about us, a company can more easily embrace, here are our gifts and our talents. Here's the downside of those that we have to pay really careful attention to so that we don't do disservice to our people. They become more trustworthy when they're willing to show some of the shadow side of what they do amazingly in the world, and they attract more of the right people again. But that requires a fair amount of vulnerability, because as human beings, we're simply... we're programmed to be afraid to lose the things that we have, right, in exchange for something that we want or that wants to emerge.
Yeah. Yeah. Boy, I'll tell you, like, that story that you just mentioned about the CEO who had lost his wife. I mean, Hell Yes Entrepreneur, I don't know if you felt it, but I don't even know who that person is, but I already kind of love that person. Or, you know, like, there's something about, look, if you're a human being on planet Earth and you're still alive, you've probably suffered at some point in your life. And to hear that somebody talk about, a major, life kind of tragedy in their life like that, immediately I feel kind of pulled in, like, oh my gosh, yes, I've been through very difficult times too. And I feel a connection to that person, even though I don't know who they are. I wanted to kind of ask, like, is there a way to sort of parse out vulnerability from maybe sort of like a false vulnerability? Like, maybe like people are working with you and they're sort of like, yeah, I want to be vulnerable, you know, and then they kind of say something like, you know, my big, you know, vulnerability is that I'm a perfectionist, you know, this sort of like, you know, fake answers you hear in an interview about, like, oh, I'm a perfectionist. And so
my weakness, Norman, is that I care too much.
I care too much about you, you know, whatever. Like, how do you know, like, this is like, yes, this is authentic versus like, vulnerability is kind of like, Brene Brown, vulnerability. I want to be vulnerable, but not really vulnerable. Like, is there a way to sort of parse that?
it's a wonderful inquiry. It's something that I do very intuitively. So I have to think a little bit about your question, but it's, I think that what Brene Brown has beautifully gifted to the world, is that more people now than ever intellectually get it.
Yeah.
And that is phenomenal. And it's awesome. A smaller percentage of people, can hold on to that desire to be vulnerable as it gets more and more uncomfortable. Right. Cause that's when it's really easy to love vulnerability in thought, but not in practice, because it is, as much as I practice it and I truly practice it regularly, but I also have to be careful, because rehearsed vulnerability is not vulnerability. It's not vulnerable for me to tell you that story that I did about my mother looking into my eyes or my cousin. There's a tiny bit of vulnerability for me, but it's very small. So whenever I do presentations, like, for example, I constantly have to be pushing into how is it vulnerable today, mm-hmm. as opposed to just repeating something, because then it's just acting. Uh-huh. Right? So what you're alluding to is, like, some of us, I can be very slick. If I don't really keep an eye on that, the audience might think it's vulnerable, in which case I'm manipulating them. And I got to be very careful. I don't want to do that, right? Mm-hmm. But it could be a default. Like today, I don't really want to get more vulnerable, so I will do this in a way that I know that will be perceived as vulnerable. It's very subconscious stuff. I don't have those thoughts, right? But in parsing it out, I think we have, as human beings, we have a radar. Right, like, a simple way to recognize that is, even though we all still go on social media, right, which I find fascinating, because we scroll through knowing we're getting one dimension. We fully are aware at this point.
Yeah.
Right. But we still do it, which is, it really is fascinating to me that we're willing to do that, and I am included. But the radar has been more and more finely tuned, right? Yeah. So that we know in those personal moments, when someone's giving us their Facebook version as opposed to something more authentic, we can tell the difference. What we don't all have is the ability to articulate what it is that we might be experiencing that feels off. That's, like, people like me, you know, I think probably people like you, that's our expertise. Like, I have the ability to recognize something in my shoulders got really tight when that was said. Let's explore that. Or, I feel sucker punched when I hear that I can feel the authenticity mm-hmm. in that. So there's the embodied reaction that we have, which is very intuitive. And then there's the ability to take that and find the language for it coming out our mouth. That is something we can all practice. We can all get better at. It's a muscle like any other that can be exercised, but most of us haven't really worked that out through our education or our career. So it needs more intention as we're older and asking different questions.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that not to, to sound like, oh, we're elite, you know, people since we come from an acting background, but I just know in that world, you know, if you're, I've done some directing of, you know, when you're working with an actor, it's sort of like, you know, it's like, no, try it again. That wasn't quite. And there's like, yes, that was, you know, the difference between that, the authentic performance, where somebody really comes alive on stage versus, it feels a little kind of, just wooden or something. So, okay.
That's a great example, because everyone's seen movies. Everyone's watched shows where they've had that feeling.
Yeah.
They might not necessarily be able to articulate why they didn't like it.
Yeah.
Right. Or why it created confusion, but they feel it.
Yeah, I mean, not to go down the road, but, you know, like Star Wars original trilogy versus the prequels. Yeah, anyway.
Couldn't help it. I know it.
Don't get me started. Okay, well, maybe that's a good transition into, before we wrap up, just to touch a little bit on and kind of give you a chance to, if there's any stories that come to mind around the kind of the acting background that you mentioned. I mean, you talked about a Super Bowl commercial, Fight Club, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, anything there that might be a fun story for our listeners to hear.
Sure. I have a bunch of them. The Mountain Dew story is great. I mean, it was a really fun shoot. It was also a defining, I think, point in my life. It was directed by a guy named Samuel Bayer, and it was he directed Nirvana's Smells Like Teen Spirit, iconic guy. And he did a lot of music videos, big music videos, and he was brought into the commercial world. And we shot it on the lot at 20th Century Fox for a few days, 300 extras. It was a big production. They put a lot of money into it. It was a takeoff on Queen's Bohemian Rhapsody. So a lot of folks saw it. It was it aired first time at the Super Bowl in the year 2000 after the second half kickoff, which is a prime spot for advertisers. Like, and it's been named one of the 50 greatest Super Bowl commercials of all time. I got paid very well for it. And ultimately, like, as I'm able to trace back kind of through connecting the dots of my own story, recognizing that for a period of time there, I was continually hired to use my gifts to open people up emotionally. And then a company would follow with a product that I didn't necessarily think was bettering the world.
Right.
Like, so this, yeah, this second, and Mountain Dew is Mountain Dew.
Yeah.
Plenty of people love it.
Sure.
There are plenty of downsides to it, et cetera. The second half of my career, once I really recognized that was not in alignment with myself, I was able to finally articulate like what I feel is a tremendous responsibility for what comes next after we emotionally open people up. Yeah. I did not take responsibility for that when I was younger, right? Like, I went where the money was, what felt cool, what my friends were like, that's amazing. But later in life, it became all about how do we attract people who really want to be responsible with that? And then, yes, I absolutely want to use my gifts to help emotionally make people available to what it is that we have to offer the world, because that's highest use of it to my
right. Yeah, again, I totally identify with that. Anything to say about Fight Club?
Fight Club was amazing. I mean, I did 8 days on Fight Club. It was actually how I got into the Screen Actors Guild. I was a new actor out there. I literally wrote the casting director and said, I need someone to throw me a bone. That was the language that I used. I need someone to throw me a bone. I feel like I'm here to do something big in the world. I know I need to get into the union. And this casting director, like, that was a really kind gesture, because the productions actually have to pay a fee to bring in someone who's non-union. And so they gave me 8 days on Fight Club. I shaved my head. You can see me in the movie. It was background work. I was one of the guys, you know, underneath. I looked sharp back then, so I was, you know, one of the guys in the circle around where the fighting happens, and I'm okay. Cheering on. And Brad Pitt was the most generous, kind guy on set, like, really lovely human being. Meatloaf kept everyone in stitches, absolutely hilarious. And Ed Norton was method acting, so he was a complete and total lunatic from my perspective. And I didn't know what method acting even was back then, to be honest. So I didn't know that's what was happening. I just thought he was an absolute jerk. But they were like, you know, the makeup women would come over and be working on him before a scene, and he would shove people off of him. I mean, he was just so unkind. And later in life, I understand the choice.
Yeah.
It's not something that I could do or would want to do, but I can respect and understand the choice. But that, all of that, even watching David Fincher direct for 8 days, I mean, the typical extras go off in their own corner and play games when they're not on set. And like, I was right behind the director, watching the monitors, learning everything I could about what a brilliant team can bring together. It was a phenomenal education.
Awesome. Awesome. I love it. I won't go into the whole story, but my peak film moment was in 2000. Well, the movie came out in 2004, but it was 2003. I think I was in the psychological thriller, The Machinist, with Christian Bale.
Sure. Yeah.
So I played I was the DMV guy. So I actually had like a minute of dialogue with Christian Bale. This is the one where he lost like 60 pounds, to play the role. Kind of went overboard. I don't think anybody asked him to do that, but that's, you know, Christian Bale for you.
Yeah.
And I think he's developed a reputation. There was that, you know, Terminator Salvation. There was like back, you know, there's some video of him going off on somebody. For the record, he was extremely nice backstage.
It's great to hear. That's great to hear. How cool. And dude, a minute is a long time. That's phenomenal.
Yeah. I'm amazed. It seemed like, oh, this is kind of cool. But like over the years, I've gotten a lot of dividends out of that. People are like, oh my God, you were in The Machine. Oh my God, that's so cool. You know, so.
Yeah. Vulnerable moment. I had three words that I said on Buffy the Vampire Slayer. I got to work on it for 3 days just because they were behind and couldn't get to me over and over. It's like, kept getting invited back. And this is back when Joss Whedon drove a jalopy. It was like, I think it was season 2 or 3, like he was awesome. Making a lot of money, but still drove an old crapper car, right? But like, I said the word ID 3 times as a bartender. Right? That's my Buffy the Vampire story, and people go bananas. Like, you know, Buffy the Vampire fanatics don't care. They're like, that's amazing.
Yeah. And season 2 and 3, those are awesome seasons.
Oh, they were good.
Well, Corey, it's been a real pleasure speaking with you today. Before we go, I know you mentioned The Offer, but is there anything else that you'd like to share with our listeners? And where can we find you on the web, et cetera?
Yeah, sure. People can find me at roundtablecompanies.com. It's companies with an IES. As I mentioned, roundtablecompanies.com/purpose is that free offer. I encourage people to go through that exercise. Would love to hear the results of it for anyone who wants to send them to me at Corey, Corey, at roundtablecompanies.com. CoreyBlake9000 is my handle on Twitter and on Instagram. It's 9000. Find me at Corey Michael Blake on Facebook and LinkedIn. So please feel free to connect. Would love to stay in touch with folks. The last piece that I will share is that I feel that my greatest contributions have first been to myself, right? Like learning how to better love the parts of myself that are harder to love helps me be more loving outwardly to my employees, to the people that we serve. And so one of the favorite things that I do and recommend to others as a piece of action, it's like find a place and write a check that's a little bit uncomfortable to write that ensures that you're going to develop who you are, whether that's some kind of program that you're in, whether it's online or in person, like get in there and do the good work on yourself. It pays such dividends.
Absolutely love that. And I think, you know, most of our listeners, if not everybody, is very, you know, very much about personal development as well as professional development. So that's right up our alley. Well, Corey, it's been great having you on the show. And I always like to wrap things up by saying hell yes on the count of three with my guests. Are you willing and ready to do that?
I'm jumping out of my skin ready to do it.
Oh, I can't wait. Okay, great. And so I'm, you know, previously I've been doing kind of a long hell yes, like hell yes, but these days we're doing more of like a hell yes kind of a thing.
Nice. Okay. Thank you. Nice direction.
Get on the same page. Yeah. All right, here we go. 1, 2, 3.
Hell yes.
Oh yeah. All right. Corey, thanks so much for joining me.
What a pleasure, Norman. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining me for this episode of the Hell Yes Life podcast. You can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or your favorite RSS feed. If you like the show, please leave a rating and review. And if you want to stay connected, visit hellyeslife.com and sign up for the e-newsletter and private Facebook group. Again, I'm Norman Bell. Thanks for joining me. Now let's get out there and live a hell yes life.